Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The 2-2 pitch. Launch toward left. Back at it is Brantley. He looks up. It's 1-0 Rays! Tommy Pham homers here. Two batters in, and the Rays take a 1-0 lead here in the bottom of the first.
Alvarez with a drive. Off the wall and right center. Here comes Altuve. Throw to the plate. It is in time. Altuve tagged out by Darnold. Here's the 1-2 from Snell up the middle. The Tampa Bay Rays win game four. Even the series. And two apiece. They win a pair at home after falling behind 2-0 in Houston.
Well, we're going to have a game five tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in. Happy Wednesday morning to all of you. Nice to be with you. That was the Cliff Notes version of the game last night. The Rays jump on Justin Verlander early. The Astros have a chance to chip into it. Jose Altuve gets thrown out at home. Yeah. Yada, yada, yada. It's 2-2 now.
It's all according to plan. We're filling the coffers up. We've got a game five now. It's extra revenue to sign Gerrit Cole.
It's the Seth Payne plan.
That's what I deluded myself into thinking.
It's the fiscally responsible way to go about winning a World Series.
Yes, at the end of the game last night, with Yordan at the plate, Yordan the tying run at the plate, I thought, no, why bother, Yordan? Just let's go back to the Minute Maid for Game 5. Let's stock up the reserves to be able to sign Gerrit Cole. Also, hey, look at what'll happen now. It'll be Gerrit Cole in Game 3 in New York instead of Verlander or God
Greinke.
Forbid, Greinke.
Yeah.
We need to do everything we can to keep Greinke out of that environment in New York.
Yeah, well, let's... You got to get there first, and
don't worry, everything's cool. We'll be fine. Yeah, everything's fine.
Is that the temperature of the people right now?
I don't know about the people. I'm fine. I'm calm.
You're okay?
And collected. Yeah. This is it's all every time the Astros get up there, and every time whether it's Springer or who, by the way, he broke his 0-for-13 streak that he was going. Whether it's Correa or Brantley, whoever it might be, all I think is, well, now they're just stocking up for the regression of the mean or whatever the stat heads call it. The pendulum swings back.
Yeah.
There will be an onslaught of scoring, probably starting in Game 5 of this series that never should have gone to five games. ever.
It shouldn't, but the Rays deserve to be here, man. The Rays thoroughly outplayed the Astros in those two games in Tampa Bay. Welcome in, everybody, by the way. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday morning where now all of a sudden what was sheer joy and adulation coming into the week on Monday. Seth, when we started doing shows 2 days ago, getting ready for that noon start on Monday with Charlie Morton, the Astros are up 2-0, and everybody's feeling good. A lot changes in 48 hours, man.
The Rays pitched the hell out of that baseball, is what they did.
Yeah.
And I said during the season, look, you can foresee if the Astros falter in the playoffs exactly how it's going to happen, and it was going to have a whole lot to do with the bullpen. And indirectly, I suppose that's what this is. The fact that Verlander, well, a combination of your fourth starter and your bullpen. So far, though, it hasn't just been that. It's also been Greinke, your stud number three. But when you get into last night, the reason Verlander's starting is because you don't feel great about Urquidy. You certainly don't feel great about Wade Miley. And the consistency of your bullpen isn't nearly what Tampa Bay's is.
Yeah.
So yesterday in a game in which Tampa was just in their comfort zone. Oh, we got to pitch a bunch of different people. That's what we do anyway. This is our MO.
Yeah.
They're uniquely suited to pitch a game like that.
Yeah, and then look, if whether you would go back and do it differently and whether you have an issue with AJ Hinch pitching Justin Verlander, to me are two different things. Would I go back and do it differently? Of course I would. I know what the result of the game is now. They lost the baseball game. I would have tried something different had I known the outcome. But with me, Seth, as I go back, I don't like to hindsight quarterback or armchair quarterback these things with all the benefit of hindsight. I didn't have a problem with the logic of A.J. Hinch's decision to pitch Justin Verlander in that game, especially if he were to go out there, pitcher Keady in game four, they get shelled, they lose the game or whatever. And then you get to game five, and if Verlander has a performance in game five like he did last night, then you go into the offseason saying, we had Gerrit Cole, who is the best pitcher on the planet right now, and we used him once in the entire series.
Except that I would imagine there's a chance, depending on how the game went, Cole might have been used in game five anyway.
Maybe in a relief capacity.
Right.
Yeah, you'd start Verlander.
9 innings of Verlander and Cole is something that, it would put you, you'd have to be in all-out mode at that point. It's got to be, because then you're really setting yourself up to be in a tough position in the next series.
Yeah, the problem with that is if Verlander comes out in game five like he came out in game four, all of a sudden you're bringing Cole in and it doesn't matter, you have the best pitcher on the planet.
Well, the whole thing that saves Hinch from more scrutiny, and I wouldn't scrutinize him anyway, but you would think...
is a World Series title in 2017.
Yeah, that, but also the bats are dead. You can't... Verlander, as great as he is on 3 days rest, cannot also produce 4 runs at the plate.
Right.
You know, you roll him out there, like he's not, Verlander is not to blame for any of the lack of offensive production. So if it had been Urquidy, if it had been Wade Miley, whoever it might have been that might have let up 4 runs, they still, like 4 runs. 4 runs is not too much to ask out of an offense like the Astros.
Yeah. Does the way these first 4 games have played, is a 4-game sample where you've watched a team that's clearly, like, talent-wise inferior to you, do you think it gives any big-picture thought to Jeff Luhnow and Jim Crane about how this team's constructed going forward when it comes to making decisions on who to give big, big contracts to? Look, Gerrit Cole still needs to pitch in Game 5. If Gerrit Cole does what he's supposed to do in Game 5, then if anything, it amps up the prioritization to me of Gerrit Cole
right. When
it comes to this offseason.
Well, that's what they were saying on the broadcast like last night. Something to the effect of great pitching beats great hitting. And that feels like the kind of narrative that, depending on which offseason, like this is an offseason where it's very easy
defense
to
wins championships.
Right. Yeah. And then the next year, okay, the year the Astros won the series.
Right.
Sometimes 17 runs in a slugfest in LA wins championships. It's just, you never can tell. It does lend credence to the idea of just if you're a team like the Rays, they're not as good as the Astros.
No, of course
but
not.
But they're able to do this because their pitching is so good.
Right.
That they, in this matchup, the Astros just have faltered. And like, you know they're capable of doing. You know that. But on the same token, all right, Verlander goes out on 3 days rest. Verlander, to his credit, did not try to even make one little hint about the 3 days rest. But I'll say that I don't quite, I believe him that he believes that. But what he's saying is that he felt great, but that might just be the adrenaline of the moment. You know, I think that physically, yeah, he probably felt awesome because it was that's him rising to the occasion, but the control wasn't there. He physically didn't have it, and I think that's where you get the 3 days rest. Yeah. He might not have felt it consciously, but I think it affected him. It's not some flukish bad performance out of Verlander. You can't just ignore the fact that it was on 3 days rest.
Here's Justin Verlander on his outing last night.
The velocity was there, but the control wasn't and the slider wasn't. Mix that in with a good approach for those guys in the first. And then... You know, honestly, I need those infield singles to be caught. When you don't have it, you need the balls that are put in play on the ground to go your way, and they didn't. And when those don't go your way, there's more traffic on the bases. I walked a couple guys, and then they came up with a couple big hits when they needed to. So, obviously, not the way you would script it. Sucks.
There's nothing cheap about how the Rays chased Justin Verlander yesterday. They hit 2 home runs. They had traffic on the bases every inning. They finished each of the first 3 innings with runners in scoring position. They left runners in scoring position on base in each of the first 3 innings. As Verlander alluded to, he walked guys. He gave up line drive hits. He gave up ground ball hits. Yeah. And then the 2 home runs.
And there was a certain amount of luck involved with it, too, as far as it just seemed like that kind of night where all the little bloops were turning into hits for the Rays.
Yeah.
All these hard hit balls by the Astros, including The problem with Altuve, the play where he was thrown out at home was the ball was just hit too damn hard. It bounced off the wall quickly enough that they were able to field it with an incredible
it was
relay.
A perfect relay and a perfect throw.
And I don't have any issue at all with Gary Pettis sending him home there.
For one,
if you have an issue with Gary Pettis sending him home there, then you have an issue with AJ Hinch, because that's what AJ Hinch wants. They want to be aggressive there. And the chances of the probability is
AJ Hinch is the Chinese government in this.
Yeah.
He controls everything. Yeah, don't blame Pettis.
But it's true. In that situation, the probability of the infielder turning one of the most magnificent relays anybody in baseball has ever seen is pretty small. So the chances are in a game like that, especially, that you want to just try to, you're trying to produce runs there. I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it. You got to credit the game there. You got to credit an incredible relay.
Yep.
And it sucks for Astros fans.
It does. It does. Here's AJ Hinch on Justin Verlander's performance.
You know, Justin gave us what he could, and you know, they did a really good job of getting into the game and putting up some really good at-bats early. He got burned a couple times with some, or more than a couple times on some secondary pitches. You know, the changeup to Pham, I think, really kick-started the momentum. They're a momentum-driven team. I mean, they're always, you know, they're always creating momentum for themselves. And then, obviously, their pitching staff did a tremendous job. But I think he gave up 8 or 9 hits, almost all of them on secondary pitches. So they did a good job of staying with him. I thought his fastball was really good. I mean, it was pretty hot coming out today. He threw the ball hard. I think his location was, you know, a little spotty, but it's playoff baseball, so I think they deserve some credit.
So that's where I'm. That's where I would say I think the 3 days rest, as much as nobody's making that excuse for him, including Verlander himself, the fact that the velocity is there, that feels like that's adrenaline. That's the moment. That's Verlander rising to the moment. But the lack of control is maybe your body just still being a little bit off. So Cole comes in game 5 and hasn't lost since, I don't know what, early summer?
May.
Is it, was it officially? Oh, yeah, no, so spring. Since springtime. He won an entire season.
Yeah, it wasn't summer till June 22nd.
Yeah, he won an entire quarter rotation of the.
Yeah.
There was
still pollen on my windshield in the mornings when Garrett Cole was last losing baseball games.
The Earth traveled more than a quarter of the way of its path around the sun in the time.
This is about Garrett Cole versus the Earth, is what this is right now.
Yeah.
That's how good Garrett Cole is. My confidence level in Game 5 is booming right now because it's Garrett Cole. It's not Garrett Cole versus the Rays. It's Garrett Cole versus planet Earth.
I feel like we need to bring druids into this or something.
You want to?
We need to, have somebody send somebody over to Stonehenge or something, now that we're talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This Glasnow, it sounds like a dastardly fellow, doesn't it? Glasnow. Doesn't that feel like that either sounds like a Soviet criminal or maybe somehow some kind of some black magic fiend in
sounds
England
Scottish to me.
In the Middle Ages. Yeah.
Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe he'll wear a kilt.
I don't trust the Scots. I mean, the ones that live in Houston are cool, but the other ones,
the
I don't
ones
trust
that
the
listen
other Scots.
To Sports Radio 610 are awesome. Don't alienate the Scots.
I've done it years ago when we have the home field and, you know, we win at home, we lost on the road, and then come back home, make it happen. So we've been here before. You know, there's no pressure right now. The guys are confident to go out there home. We know we're playing a good team, but we are a good team as well, and it's going to be a good fifth game.
All right, Seth, I'm calm now. That's all I needed to hear was Jose Altuve. If there was a way I could change my voice on my GPS to Jose Altuve, I would be so much less stressed out in traffic and trying to get to places.
Oh, yeah.
If it was Jose Altuve just telling me to turn left.
He's ready.
It's okay.
When you turn left right here. When you punch in the get directions.
Yeah.
When they're ready, he would say, it's ready.
And I would be so
just
calm.
Like the HEB commercial.
Yes.
And yeah, he would go like, hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. In 3 exits. Take a right.
Look, even with Garrett Cole pitching, I'm nervous about a game 5. Because the Astros are not the team with the all-important the suddenly important momentum right now from analytics-based AJ Hinch.
What the hell was that?
I'm old school, so I believe in momentum and things like that. The Astros don't have it at all right now, but now that I heard Jose Altuve say everything's... He didn't say this in those exact words, but what I heard was, everything's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
But they don't have momentum.
Who cares? We have Jose freaking Altuve. That's who we have.
AJ Hinch, the manager for one of the most analytically based teams in sport, where... You bring up the word momentum up at the conference up there. What's the big Sloan Analytics conference or something? They'd bounce you out on your ass.
They would.
A bunch of nerds would pick you up. You would take eight of them.
They would.
And you'd
be like the guy who threw a shoe at the president.
And they'll come back here with your
security. Don't tase me, bro.
Yeah. Hinch is getting dressed. I want to see Hinch up at the Sloan conference putting his reading glasses on. Ode to momentum. People start throwing shoes at him.
Four security guards and him screaming, "Don't tase me, bro."
Yeah, so Altuve's not. He's fine.
He's fine, and we're fine because we have Jose Altuve, and we also we've got AJ Hinch as the manager, who has experience in championship elimination type situations, and here is AJ Hinch on playing a game five.
Welcome to postseason baseball. I mean, this is as good as it gets. I mean, these series across the league have been incredible. And obviously we worked all season to get home field. We have it for a reason. It'll be nice to get home. I love this series. I love the opportunity that we have. I mean, you get there in funny ways, and sometimes it can create a little bit of drama for you, and sometimes it can create a little bit of stress, but I'd rather be here than at home. In the world of not playing. So we'll take another opportunity to win a game. Garrett Cole on the mound. I certainly feel very comfortable with that. Anybody would just put him on the mound.
Okay. Let me be very clear about it. And I like AJ Hinch's demeanor. I like AJ Hinch as the manager of my baseball team going into a game five. The part where he says, hey, this is why we played all year to get home field. This is why you played all year to get home field against the Yankees or, say, the Dodgers in the World Series. We didn't play all year, so you would need home field after blowing a 2-0 lead in the ALDS and potentially having to go home against the Rays.
You actually could have forfeited your last 10 games
and still had it.
You didn't have to play all year. You could have.
I like the narrative. I get what you're saying, AJ. AJ, no, look, that's coming from a good place. He is trying to do what Jose Altuve's mere voice does inherently, which is calm us all down.
Oh, yeah, this is exactly where you want to be.
Hey, now, guys, rather be here than on the couch.
You understand these things happen, and you've had to grudgingly accept and acknowledge how good the Rays pitchers have been throughout this series. But the biggest thing you worry about is, okay, if you make it through this, and I'm still confident they're going to win game five, man, they've really injected a heavy dose of reality into the whole thought about, you only need three pitchers in the playoffs anyway. Whatever. Just pitch three guys, and every now and then guys go on short rest. It's hard for me not to look ahead to the series with the Yankees right now and start to get really nervous about what all that portends.
Yeah.
I'm not looking past the Rays. You can be damn sure of that. They've got me nervous but in an excited way. I'm glad that, look, home field advantage has mattered for these Astros in these last few years. It mattered when they won the World Series, and it certainly matters now where you've seen the Rays make fielding errors based on noise. You know, the noise when Choi and the other two fellas had the communication error
right
over that pop-up in right field. Was that Gurriel? That was Gurriel in game one.
Yep.
I like what Minute Maid's going to be like tomorrow night. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. What time's the game tomorrow?
It's, I believe, 6 o'clock.
An evening game. Look at that.
Yeah, an evening
game. That's what happens when you end up being the
that's
the
what happens when the Yankees close out the Twins early.
Oh, hey, good news. Aroldis Chapman. Not that we
What was the deal with that?
Not that we would want this, but in the post-game celebration, apparently, he was struck by a beer bottle somehow.
Okay.
And his throwing hand got dinged up.
Yeah, Amy told me about that last night. I got home from our Deshaun Watson thing, and I was scrolling through Twitter and Facebook to see the pictures that people were putting up about it. And it was one of those classic Amy and Sean conversations where she's telling me things, and I'm sort of hearing like 20% of it.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, an Astros reliever got hurt with a bottle," and I'm kind of like, "Oh yeah."
Yankees reliever?
I mean, Yankees reliever. Yeah. I'm sorry, God, I'm not even listening to my own self in these things. And she's like, she apparently at some points goes, "Yeah, it was closer Aroldis Chapman." And I go, and all I heard was Chapman because I was so defocused on what she was saying. I go, oh, that's the closer. She goes, yeah, I just said Yankees closer Aroldis Chapman, you jackass.
I wonder this is my theory. No, maybe we actually have the details of what happened, but before you tell me what those are. My theory is that he
I'm going to like this better.
My theory is he was trying to twist off a non-twist off beer bottle. And he's thinking, he's like, I can throw the ball 103 miles an hour. What the hell do I care whether it's a twist
and off
or not?
And he slices hand his hand on the cap.
Boy, you'd rather have that than a bruise on the back of his hand, wouldn't you? It's for the Astros fans.
So what are we rooting for?
That he lacerated the palm of his hand.
Yeah, here's the thing.
With the beer bottle.
I feel like rooting for anything means that they're going to lose game five. The Astros.
No, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm just going to look past the Rays. I'm going to start talking about matchups for.
you see how much heat Landry's getting on the text page for dismissing the Rays before the series starts.
Oh, was he really? Oh, okay. Oh, well, I'm saying it jokingly and sarcastically. So.
People hear what they want to hear sometimes.
Okay.
I'm just letting you know.
I am, by the way, everybody, I will start. I've been kind of obstinate and bullheaded about the Urquidy pronunciation because I've been going off of the Round Rock.
Have you been pronouncing it?
I've been pronouncing it Urquidy for a couple reasons. One, when he first came up, a couple guys in the Astros organization were pronouncing it that way, so it kind of latched onto me. And then somebody said, no, Seth, that's wrong. So I went and I looked. The only thing I could find online from the pronunciation guide was a Round Rock. Pronunciation guide from a lineup card.
What did it say?
It said Urquidy. And so I was still saying it wrong according to that. But then the more people corrected me, the more obstinate I got about it. But one of our listeners got me yesterday and he said, it is a man's name, you know. Like, it's kind of disrespectful to actively mispronounce his name. So.
Oh, it's the name of another human being.
Yeah. Okay. So that brought it home to me. All right, Urquidy.
Did you use,
say your name correctly?
Did you try to use Google? Sometimes they'll pronounce it for you.
I never trust those at all because if you go to some of our Latin players' names and play it out, it's wrong.
They butcher it?
A lot of times
the computer
yeah.
butchers it
yeah
you're Quinty.
You know what gets me though, honestly, with a lot of the
you're Quinty.
A lot of the Latin names especially is when I'll have my iPhone read an article for me when I'm driving in. You can it'll speak articles for you.
I bet that's entertaining.
They don't get the names right very often, and Siri says Urquidy.
Siri does?
Yeah, that wench. She's cost me professionally
by having me
mispronounce your Urquidy.
Skank. This is why you're going to go have an affair with Alexa now. This is why I've been seeing Alexa on the side.
Well,
Siri.
I changed Siri's voice to a man's for a while. You know, I'm an open guy. Whatever. but now I updated my phone, and Apple updates like they like to do. They improved a few things, but then they've made other things that were working well way worse, and one of those things is it's changed it back to. I don't like Siri's voice reading to me. It grates against me a little bit. So I had a nice, pleasant sounding baritone.
Oh, that's
nice. But he's gone now. He left me in the middle of the night.
Because of the upgrade?
Because my phone was plugged in and the Wi-Fi was on. Yeah.
And Apple will do that to you. It'll update you without asking for one last. That's why I don't leave my phone plugged in at night.
The other thing it did, I was listening to John McClain's power rankings while I was driving in this morning, and for some reason, Gardner Minshew's name sent it into French translation.
Really?
So for the Jaguars description, it translated it into French. I was listening to whatever John said about the Jaguars on his power rankings were recited to me in French. And I took French for 4 years in high school. It was shocking how little I understood of this. Apparently, I must have had mono during the football French.
Okay. Can I make a suggestion to the good folks at Apple?
Yeah.
If you could somehow create a way that when the browser reads John McClain's articles to you, it reads them in John McClain's voice.
That'd be awesome.
That would be incredible. Here are my power rankings.
Can you imagine if Nick Foles comes back and Gardner Minshew et c'est la vie?
I need John McClane.
John McClane in French.
French.
Gardner Minshew. Il est le premier quarterback.
I love it. How
sacré bleu, pathétique.
I wanted either John McClane or Pepe Le Pew's voice.
Oh, Nick Foles, you are so beautiful, so tall and gawky looking. Oh, and I admire your faith, but this is the problem. I have no faith in you as a quarterback.
Pathetic. All right.
Pepe Le Pew, kids, if you don't understand. probably a cartoon that will never be shown again.
No,
boy, you talk about things that don't survive Me Too very well. Holy crap. Pepe Harvey Weinstein LePew. Jeez, Pepe LePew.
How is there anybody?
Foghorn Leghorn also.
Was he pretty aggressive with the women?
I thought. Well, I don't know that he was aggressive with the woman with the women, but he had a.
He wasn't a racist.
He had an accent that seemed.
He just sounded deep south.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. All right. He didn't do anything that was.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't like he was Foghorn Leghorn. Like, look, I'm not a racist. I just tell it like I see it. You see the here, no, not to be a racist, but there's certain statistics that you cannot avoid.
Sorry, I'm thinking of Archie Bunker. Okay. So here's how we're working this today. John McClain is going to be in an hour earlier than usual. He's going to be in the 7 o'clock hour with us. So we'll start to look ahead to the Chiefs and the Texans. We'll ask John. John's got the broader historical perspective here in Houston, Seth. What happens if the worst case scenario happens on Thursday night? Where would this disappointment stack up compared to the many, many disappointments that John McClain has been witness to in his Houston sporting lifetime?
You know what? Let me put that out on the text line right now, just for historical perspective. For those of you, do I ask the question now? No, we have to ask it now because I'm assuming the Astros are going to win and then we wouldn't talk about it at all. So I will ask it now. If the Astros were to lose this game five, where would this stand in relation to the Oilers' loss to the Bills? Because it'd be kind of similar circumstances. You lose to a team that you really shouldn't lose to. This would be the thing about the Bills was that was all happened within the course of one game. That you go from feeling like, hey, all right, we're on to the next round, versus, and then in the course of 30 minutes, it was all dashed in front of you. This has been a slow burn, which I feel makes it worse if it were to actually happen, which I don't anticipate. I do not expect that.
So you
that's
say,
why we have to ask it now.
So you say this would be worse.
I feel like this would be worse because it's going to be. This would be drawn out. I say would be. It's not going to happen, but it would be drawn out over the course of 5 days.
It's a great topic.
4 days.
It's a great topic because I think you can make a really good argument for either side. The thing that, to me, the most disappointing thing if the Astros were to lose tomorrow night about this is they're the favorites going into the World Series. Not just being up 2-0 on these guys, because it's a short series, and this isn't like the Yankees blowing a 3-0 lead to the Red Sox. It would be bad blowing a 2-0 lead, but a 5-game series, even when you're up 2-0, there's a lot of variability built into it. So that would be bad, but to me the most disappointing part, if they were to lose, would be just not only are they the biggest favorite, like theoretically it should be a big disappointment if they don't get to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a disappointment that they would be losing to the Rays. The thing about the Oilers, that this is where it sort of appeals to my mathematical nature, is the percentage chance in game of what happened to the Oilers losing a 35-3 lead in the second half of a football game is infinitesimally small compared to losing a 2-0 lead in a series.
But it also, since the divisional round came into existence, a 107 win team has never lost in the divisional round.
Yeah, no, there's reasons for disappointment in both.
Both of them would be extremely, extremely unlikely.
I think the Astros having won a World Series a couple years ago may cushion the blow a little bit. Like think about if the Astros hadn't won a World Series and this is what would happen. This would be a complete... Seth, we would be talking so much about 1998 and 1999 today if the Astros hadn't already won a World Series.
It would be all about... Oh, and you know, that thing that got so... it was so hard to handle was the whole, Houston sports. Remember, we haven't heard that since the Astros won the World
Series.
That's right. Well, we've heard it a little bit here and there, but not like the constant bombardment you'd get anytime any team got down in a series. Oh, Houston sports, here we go. They exorcised a lot of those demons. Now, I wonder how long does that take? We need a championship from one of the other two teams or the Astros again sometime in the next 5 years, or I feel like that starts to happen.
That's
again.
A good question. What's the statute of limitations on being able to say, oh, well, there you go, fill in name of city sports?
Because it had been 20 years, you know, since
the Rockets.
Yeah,
22.
So 22 years between those two sets of championships. Somewhere along the way, people started saying, oh, Houston sports again.
Now, the difference
with the Oilers losing to the Bills was that you couldn't have predicted that 20 years later Frank Reich was going to rise up out of the ashes and come to haunt you by coaching the
no,
Colts.
You couldn't.
So at some point 20 years from now, Glasnow shows up and he's coaching the Rangers. And like the Rangers become your daddy because Glasnow's the best manager that ever lived or something. That's what you'd have to fear.
I hope I'm here to see it.
A Glasnow-Blake Snell combo.
I'm here for that because it means I made it to the seven handle. That's all. Deshaun Watson was in our Verizon Artist Live Lounge last night. We're going to play the interview in the 8 o'clock hour. That's why John's coming in an hour early. What'd you think of Deshaun last night, Seth?
He was really, really good. That was fun. I was pretty tired when I went to that last night. And I was walking in. I was like, oh, man, I got to sit in a room for an hour and a half and listen to people talk. I don't know if I'm up for this. But you and Clint did an incredible job.
Thank you.
You were very well prepared. You asked some great questions. I really enjoyed a couple of them. We'll listen to them later. And Clint broke down a few plays with Deshaun. And it was really, really cool because it's like Deshaun has been in these last couple of press conferences where he's talked a lot of technical stuff. But when you see him breaking down specific plays and especially, man, when he broke down the Kenny Stills touchdown
in the New Orleans game,
a couple of the adjustments he made during that play were so phenomenally awesome. And it made me so incredibly excited. Like the number of things that he calculated in the course of several seconds on that play were really, really cool. And the other big thing that excited me was him talking to Clint about the decision early on in the game last week to throw to Jordan Akins when he could have forced the ball to DeAndre.
Yeah.
Like he almost definitely wouldn't have done in the past. That was a conscious decision through the course of the week to focus on getting rid of the ball quicker.
Yep.
And easier and taking the easy money. I think that last week, though it was against the Falcons defense that is atrocious. I get that. I understand that. There's been a shift in philosophy and psychology between both, I think, Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson that's going to pay dividends. And I think they might have taken one of those quantum leaps forward in terms of how they operate. I don't know what it's going to look like versus the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not predicting that all of a sudden they're Super Bowl caliber or anything, but I think we're going to see a difference for the rest of the season here.
Yeah. For those of you, and we're going to get to the Deshaun audio here in just a minute, but I'll say this about Clint's portion of it. First of all, I could watch Clint Sterner and Deshaun Watson break down film for 3 hours. It was tremendous. For those who have enjoyed Deshaun breaking down the plays in his press conferences on Sundays after games, and I've enjoyed that. I think it's been something unique. I think it's been something different. I think, as you've said, Seth, man, maybe more players should do this. It informs the fans a little bit more about what's going on. Most players who I've seen evaluate and talk about it say he's talking at a very, very basic level, which is good.
Right, right.
You know, he shouldn't be talking in complete foreign jargon to people. He's explaining it in a way that people can understand. The thing that he was doing with Clint last night that made it so cool is Clint had plays on an iPad that we shot up onto the movie screen, and he and Deshaun had laser pointers.
Yeah.
And they're doing the coach's clicker thing where they're playing it and rewinding it back. Deshaun's pointing out all of his reads before the snap. And this is what I'll say about Deshaun Watson relative to that film study. I think most people in Houston are supremely confident in Deshaun Watson as a player and a person. As a player, I think everybody's supremely confident just because he's performed at such a high level so early in his career. If you were to watch him do the things you were just talking about, pointing out the things pre-snap, pointing out the little subtle communications he has with his receivers that he was pointing out that you don't see as you're watching during the game, whatever confidence level you had in Deshaun Watson, go ahead and double it. You know, go ahead and tack on to it. Because when you watch him break these things down, he's an incredibly, incredibly intelligent football player.
Well, and the really cool thing, too, is, and you still don't get this, even when you're watching those plays, when you're breaking it down in a film room, you don't get a sense for how many decisions have to be made very quickly by
yes.
a quarterback. And, you know, I've talked to quarterbacks about this before, where if you got up to the line of scrimmage and you had 2 minutes to think about all this stuff, a lot of times you'd be able to figure out pretty much what every defense was doing every time. Because with 11 guys out there, you'd figure out a tell or something. Problem is, there's just not enough time to get all of it done. You've got 20 seconds max, usually, to figure out all that stuff. And sometimes, by the time you get through everything, it's a few seconds as the play clock expires. But the really cool thing in the Saints game was him realizing that because of the noise, Duke Johnson, because of the noise and the fact that Duke Johnson had been there less than a week, or only been there a few weeks, that Duke Johnson didn't get the protection call. And Deshaun had a pretty good idea that Duke wasn't going to get the guy that he was supposed to block because of the angle he took at the snap. So Deshaun knew he had to get rid of the ball really, really quickly and checked and kind of looked to check to see where the pass rusher was in relation to Deshaun before he unleashed the ball on that. You recall on that touchdown throw to Kenny Stills, he was getting tattooed as he threw the ball. And just a few of the other plays he broke down. It was really cool to see. And that's where, like, all that stuff, all the higher level thinking that honestly some quarterbacks never get to. Brett Favre is a guy that didn't know what a nickel defense was until his third year in the NFL. That's a true story. That's a true story. He didn't know what a nickel defense was. It's crazy. But he was awesome. Deshaun's at a much higher level than a lot of young quarterbacks. It's just a matter now, really, of a lot of the, it's a lot of the game theory, just flow of the game, taking the easy plays. And something, there's something about Clemson guys, especially, I think, because they make a living in college of the really making the really difficult plays look routine. You remember when DeAndre first got here, his rookie year, he'd be in meetings, Andre said, and was always just saying, why don't they just throw the ball? Just throw the ball up. Why don't they just throw the ball up? Just throw the ball up. And Andre would say, hold on there, son. It's a little bit different. I also want to use a Foghorn Leghorn voice with Andre.
Andre Johnson. Yeah.
I'm going to talk to Andre about
I
that.
I see here.
Hold on. I'm going to text Andre and tell him he's got to start talking with a Foghorn Leghorn voice.
Foghorn Leghorn, Andre. That's funny.
So it's just a matter of, like I've said before, he's in that steep part of the learning curve right now where he's trying to do a whole bunch of things. And for a long time, he was doing it behind shaky offensive line protection. The offensive line protection's gotten a lot better. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better right now. And I think you can start to see the process slow down a little bit. And he's realizing, oh, okay, if I get consistent offensive line protection, maybe I don't have to hit home run every single time, and especially on first and 10. A 5-yard reception looks pretty nice these days.
He's deadly with time to throw. That's a statistical and an aesthetic fact if you watch Deshaun Watson. So it was really cool last night watching him break that stuff down. Deshaun volunteered this. I didn't have a question about this. We were at a stage in the interview, and you all are going to get to hear the interview at 8 o'clock today. We're going to play the entire Deshaun Watson interview throughout the 8 o'clock hour. Deshaun volunteered this trend that's taken place. When I was asking him about high school and Clemson and his progression as a quarterback, he pointed out that this has been the pattern in his career.
I'm just kind of big on numbers. It's kind of weird. You know, coming in high school, you know, I won a state championship, first ever in my high school career after 100 years, my third year, my junior year in high school. Coming out of high school, I was a 12th overall player in the country. Going to college, I tore my ACL my rookie year, my freshman year. Came back third year, won a national championship, 12th pick of the draft.
Yeah.
Rookie year, I tore my ACL.
Yep.
Came back, now it's third year.
Are you saying what I think you're saying? Love that. Absolutely, absolutely love that.
I think he didn't say it. I helped him out there. Because if Deshaun Watson goes, so what I'm saying is we're going to win the Super Bowl this year, yeah, then that winds up on Pro Football Talk.
That's what he was, but that is what he was implying.
He was implying it, but I made sure that he didn't have to get the quote said it.
Oh, okay, yeah. You didn't want him to come enjoy this nice evening, and then all of a sudden for the next 3 days,
he gets called into O'Brien's office because he just guaranteed a Super Bowl.
Giving him the side eye.
At 3-2 in week five.
Right before they face the Chiefs. That would be like the Letterman jacket moment. That's what Deshaun should do. You should have suggested that to him after the show last night.
What's that? The Letterman jacket? Yeah. That would be great.
You know,
hey, guys, listen, here's what I have. Yeah. Wade Smith stands by the Letterman jackets, by the way.
I still do. I have forever because I thought it was really cool. And I think I just blame social media for it. If it had been 2 years before that, before everybody was on Twitter, it wouldn't have even been a big deal. Nobody would have known about it. It would have just kind of just been something they do. But it turned into looking like, oh, you're trying to make this your homecoming game or something.
Right.
I stand by the Letterman jackets.
You stand with Wade Smith.
Mostly I stand with Sean, Cody, and Connor Barwin.
Yeah.
Because that was their
They're the ones taking
idea.
The brunt of it
yeah,
still.
Yeah, those guys are probably, they probably plunked down about 10 G's to get nice leather Letterman jackets for everybody, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned the offensive line. I actually asked Deshaun about the Laramie Tunsil trade. What'd you think when you heard that trade went down on that swap meet Saturday?
It was awesome. I kind of knew something was going on because me and Coach OB is very tight, so he kind of, you know, keep me in the hand, but not too much because that's out of my pay raise.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of knew that something was going to work out, and I was out of town at the time, and I seen it, and You know, they made a splash. That's what they wanted to do, to help this team, you know, some type of way to help this team take another step to where we want to get to. And LT has been a great addition with Kenny. Two great individuals, great team players, great locker room guys who work their tails off each and every day, and it's been awesome.
The I would imagine the list of guys who get kept in the loop on things that are being done during a day where a bunch of trades are going on, players who are kept in the loop on things like that, are probably like one.
Right.
And it's the quarterback. It's and it's a good quarterback. Like there's probably like a dozen guys in the league whose GM/head coaches even communicate with them on a day where they're making a big deal like that. Deshaun Watson is apparently one of them.
Yeah, that's because it's all he's the closest thing to a basketball player.
That's right.
Like with basketball players, 100%. They talk about this stuff. Well, in the NBA these days, you need your best player to get the trade done. Think about where they that's where we've gone with basketball. Yeah, it's turned into it's not Daryl Morey making a deal, it's Daryl Morey going to James Harden and be like, hey, James,
you talk to Russ.
I really need your help here.
Can you talk to Russ so he can approve this deal
at some point? Well, now the tampering. Now they're supposedly they're going to crack down on the tampering in the NBA. Now we'll see. The listeners have weighed in on whether an Astros loss in Game 5 would be worse than the Oilers Bills. A lot of people are saying that the Astros would be way worse because the Bills game was a wild card game, whereas this is the Astros are the number one seed.
Yeah.
This is, and it's, in my opinion, it's the fact that it would happen over the course of four long days that make it that much more painful. You're watching, it's like
starving to death as opposed to being shot in the head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd much rather be shot in the head. Since we're talking about China,
it's a really
anyway,
cheery analogy about, for
6:53
in the morning.
That's one of the great things China does, is that when they send down a capital execution order, it's like within 2 weeks, and then the family has to pay for the bullet.
Yeah.
It's messed up, bro. Yeah. Wow. Messed up unless you're the...
Not like the Green Mile where you sit there for 20 years and...
No, yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true, though. At least if it's going to happen, at least I'd rather have it be done in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Can you think about what that last, like, 2 months of your death row experience
is
like?
No, I can't. It's at 6:53.
Well, no,
it's
exactly like the last 3 days of being an Astros fan. No difference whatsoever.
It's the same.
It's not even a metaphor.
Same.
Exact same thing.
Yeah,
yes.
Exact same thing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.